Good afternoon, you're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, sworn enemies Fianna Fáil vote never to enter coalition with Sinn Féin. We'll have both parties here. Brendan Howlan on why he has reported the government for setting up the Strategic Communications Unit. And Michael Fitzmaurice says he has a solution to avoid the stamp duty bill shock for farmers. All that to come, but first it's time for the news now with Christopher McKevitt. Christopher, thank you very much. You're very welcome to Saturday with Clare Byrne. Our panel today, Helen McEntee, Minister for European Affairs and Fine Gael TD, Niall Collins, Fianna Fáil TD, Pather Tobin, Sinn Féin TD, Teresa Reedy, political scientist at UCC, and Noel Whelan, barrister and political commentator. Now, Niall, you have left the Fianna Fáil Ardhéis in the RDS to join us here. We're very grateful to you for taking the time out to do that. Your members decided that Fianna Fáil should never go into coalition with Sinn Féin last night. That was a vote taken at the Ardhéis, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. That was a motion which was debated and carried almost unanimously last night. I think there was one or two dissenters. It wouldn't come as a surprise to many of us, or indeed to many within our organisation. And that's really what was reflected last night.
Tough language though, Niall. You don't invite a serpent into the bed with you, was one of the things that was said by the proposing TD. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, you have the cut and thrust of politics at Fianna Fáil Ardhéis now, but really at the end of the day, I suppose you got to look at policies in terms of our policy approach, where we stand in terms of the political spectrum and our view. Certainly if you look at how Sinn Féin have conducted themselves, even during the term of this Dáil, they avoided taking any responsibility after the last general election. We see,
but even if they wanted to after the next one, you won't have them. So, well, what, you know, you can't have it every way.
Well, we're absolutely setting out our stall. We did it before the last general election. You'll recall most of the political debate and discussion in the run-up and during the last general election was about who Fianna Fáil would go into coalition with after the general election, that Fianna Fáil would roll over and go into a coalition with Fine Gael. That didn't happen. And this, I suppose, now seems to be generating as a discussion again. We want to focus on policies, the main issues which are impacting homelessness, health, education. That's what we're concentrating ourselves on. And just in relation to Sinn Féin, you know, you've seen the shambolic way that they go about their business in the north of Ireland, you know, collapsing the Stormont executive. For a whole myriad of reasons, they have a toxic culture within their own organisation. They've had a huge exodus of young, energetic people for all the reasons that have been discussed, bullying and harassment, all that kind of stuff. So
okay,
for all of those reasons, it's not on.
Pather Tobin, toxic, shambolic, and according to Shane Cassells, you don't invite a serpent into the bed with you. How do you feel about being called a serpent?
Well, I think it's interesting that one of the big stories out of the Fianna Fáil Ardhéis is Sinn Féin. I think, you know, it's like someone who's given up cigarettes who just keeps talking about cigarettes non-stop. It's like Fianna Fáil having an obsession with regards to this.
It's the one
A couple of years ago, Fianna Fáil came looking for me to join them, right? So now what they're saying is that they're happy for Sinn Féin TDs to join their party, but they won't go into government with Sinn Féin TDs. It's an absolute nonsense. It's interesting as well that Fianna Fáil motions in the Ardhéis.
Did you think about it?
I didn't think about it at all. My major problem with Fianna Fáil is they don't mean what they say. They shadowbox on a whole number
of... Was that when you were suspended from Sinn Féin?
That was at the time where I was suspended from Sinn Féin, and Timmy Dooley came and asked me to sit down with him and said, as a Sinn Féin TD, would you come and join our political party?
Did you know about that, Niall?
No, I didn't. Shane Cassells didn't know about it either, obviously. I heard about it afterwards. But look, I mean, this is...
Try again when he's suspended next time.
There's about 100 motions being discussed across 30 events at our Ardhéis, which is running over 2 days. We have, you know, increased our membership in excess of 20,000 members, paid-up members. We have a lot of associates and people who aren't paid-up members but who support the party and are active. We have 4,500 people coming here this weekend. So if the media choose to focus on this, fine, I'm happy to address it here now. But
I would take that if it were true, right? Mm. But let's look at the budget response, Niall. Michael McGrath stands up. He says a few muted, quiet things about the budget and then he lets rip into Sinn Féin. We have a clip of it here. Let's just take a listen.
No doubt Sinn Féin will shortly launch a blistering attack on the budget. And I would hazard to guess, as was the case last year, an even more blistering attack on Fianna Fáil. They're good at attacking. That's what they do. But our message to Sinn Féin, Ciarán Cóirle, is a very simple one. you had your chance. You had your chance to influence this government when it really mattered, when the opportunity was there, but you bottled it. Sinn Féin, Ceann Comhairle, is the classic hurler on the ditch.
So it was the first thing that he went for, Niall?
It was far from the first thing that he went for, but he did point it out early in his speech. And bear in mind, on every occasion that Sinn Féin address any issue in Dáil Éireann, they have a swipe at Fianna Fáil. So look, politics is adversarial, but Michael McGrath, and in fact he did it again this morning in his address to the Ardesh, he pointed out that Sinn Féin are responsibility shy. They will talk
so he
the
mentioned
talk.
Sinn Féin
responsibility
again.
is for everybody else to take up except themselves.
Just briefly on this, the problem with Irish politics is those who are ideologically close to each other find themselves in most competition with each other and therefore spend their time attacking each other the most. And you see it over and over again where governments are actually created by parties that are ideologically very far away from each other. And that leads for inconsistencies and lack of cohesion within government. We need to, in this country, say, forget about a narrow party interest and say, what is the interest in the country? Who are those who have similar views with regards to what direction the government should be going in? And let's do business with those.
So you're saying to Fianna Fáil, can you please have a rethink?
Well,
here? No,
to be honest, what I'm saying is that people shouldn't put party issues in front of the better needs of the state.
So,
and that's what's happening.
So have a rethink. Have a rethink. Is
well,
what you're saying.
It's bananas. They're saying they won't go into government with Fine Gael. They're saying they won't go into government with Sinn Féin. Labour is not going to be big enough to put you into government. And Micheál Martin is likely now to be the first Fianna Fáil leader not to be Taoiseach.
Well, here is the hypocrisy. Patter is saying that people shouldn't put narrow party issues before the national interest. But yet they criticise us for putting the national interest to the fore in entering the confidence and supply agreement when you abjectly sat on your hands after the last general election, Patter. We have seen the... You won't take your seats
okay.
in Westminster.
Brief point and then we'll come
you've
to
collapsed the Northern Ireland executive.
The reason we're critical of Fianna Fáil is because they're actually in a three-legged race with Fine Gael. They complain about the direction of the government. They complain about the speed of the government. And yet they're actually tied together in every single decision. And
that's
you
not
can't
true.
Do both. You either take responsibility and you own the budgets that you facilitate, or you criticise them and you stop those budgets. But trying to do two at the same
okay.
time is unfair.
Teresa, do you want to come in here? Because Martin Hayden said this morning, the Fine Gael parliamentary party chairman, Fianna Fáil will do a deal with Sinn Féin and the devil himself if it meant getting back into power. Is that fair?
The voters will decide what the shape of the next coalition is going to be. And the lesson for history is that actually parties have been very flexible and fluid about coalition arrangements over the decades. So when the numbers fell in various different ways, new Rubicons were crossed at every time. Fianna Fáil went into government with the Labour Party. We had multi-party coalitions. And at the last election, the confidence and supply agreement was not quite a crossing of the Rubicon, but certainly getting close to the edge of the bridges. I think that coalition is still a bit away. But what we have learned is that parties do adapt and to the circumstances that they find themselves in. Any vote that's taken now at the Fianna Fáil Ardesh can, of course, be undone subsequently because the rules were changed in Fianna Fáil and their members have to vote for them to go into to go
very
into
very difficult,
coalition.
Though, for Fianna Fáil to reverse that position, given not just the vote, but what's been said by Niall and his colleagues and his leader.
Well, it's the same members who would have to overturn it, and I doubt if that will happen.
I mean, that may well be the case, and there are very good reasons why you see it being difficult for Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil to go into government together. I mean, ideologically, they have quite different views. There are certain historical objections on behalf of Fianna Fáil. So, the distance is quite a long way. But all of this is about positioning for the next general election. It's about trying to structure the parameters of the debate within which the next general election will take place. We've just had the budget, and everybody's realised we're getting that little bit closer to the next general election. We probably might get one more budget, and then we're facing a general election. And where's the contestation going to be? Where are the parties going to line up? Because the opinion polls have changed since the last general election. It's interesting, there is some degree of consolidation around the centre. So what's the next general election going to look like? Who's going to face off against whom? If we're going to have a big leaders debate the next time around, who's going to be in it? Is it going to be a multi-party debate with five or six leaders standing up there, or is it going to be a big face-off between Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar? And the different parties obviously all want different permutations, and this is about framing that debate.
Noel?
The notion that Fianna Fáil would go into government with Sinn Féin is politically damaging for Fianna Fáil, and that's why Micheál Martin in particular and all of his front bench, at least on the record, put so much effort into distancing themselves from that suggestion. That's what the motion last night was about. It's a rhetorical device that emphasises that Fianna Fáil will not go into government with Sinn Féin. I don't believe Fianna Fáil will go into government with Sinn Féin after the next election. I don't think there would be a majority in an Ardesh to reverse that. But the difficulty for Fianna Fáil is that leaves them in circumstances where they have to grow their vote dramatically and their seats dramatically before the election to put themselves in position to form a government with independents and Labour or other smaller parties, or they're stuck with this scenario of a confidence and supply arrangement with Fine Gael. Now, the confidence supply arrangement was entered into on the presumption by most in Fianna Fáil that they would outpoll and outbeat and get more seats than Fine Gael when the next election come. The last 6 months have changed that. The Leo Varadkar dynamic has initially, at least, I emphasise initially at least, changed that, because there's now can be no presumption that Fianna Fáil will be bigger than Fine Gael when the next election comes. Teresa's right, the polls have shifted, but actually they've only shifted in the last 6 months. And what has happened is we've returned to a traditional pattern that after elections, which have been disparate with lots of independents, people have rallied back towards the two bigger parties.
So Fianna Fáil have to deal with this Leo factor, right?
Fianna Fáil have to, and in fairness, they are perhaps a little uncertain initially how to deal with it. I think everybody's uncertain how to deal with it, because it's not clear to what extent the Leo factor settles down or does have an impact. Much will be dependent on delivery, because ultimately politics is about delivery. But I suspect by this time next year, and my instinct is the election is now actually pushed out a bit to some point in 2019. By this point next year, two big factors will shape up. One is the fact that Pascal Donohue, because of the provisions of European rules, will have more money to spend when the budget comes. He could go and blow that on an election. What he did this week suggests, and his personality suggests, he won't. But the other big thing that will kick in is Brexit. And the terror of Brexit, literally it will, I suspect, to be a terror at that stage, will be such that it will change the whole psychological dynamic as to whether or not there should or should not be okay. An election.
We're going to come back to Brexit later in the programme, but Helen, just to come to you on the politics of all of this, I was reading Philip Ryan, who writes for Independent, the Sunday Independent. He says that Taoiseach is purposely trying to antagonise the Fianna Fáil leader, wind him up, and he wants Fianna Fáil to know that Fine Gael won't be pushed around in the way that they were under Enda Kenny. Is that strategy?
I think the Taoiseach is just doing his job. I think the Taoiseach is well able to, I suppose, to get his point across. He's well able to focus on the issues of the day. And I think what's very clear and listening to all of this discussion is that people don't want an election. We don't need an election. I think this budget itself is a very clear indication that as a partnership government with our independent members, we are working together. We are working well as a confidence and supply arrangement. We do have at least another year. The confidence and supply is for three budgets, if not slightly after that. And I think that is what we are focusing on. That is what the Taoiseach is focusing on. And that needs to remain our priorities. And, you know, this is the first time in 10 years that for a budget we are balancing our books. And that shouldn't be understated or underestimated. It means the money
that
we're spending
frustrating, though,
is the same that the money that's coming back in.
You couldn't do anything. You couldn't do anything that served any ideology, because you had to satisfy Fianna Fáil, you had to satisfy the independents. So as James Healy from Machrane Farmer said, it was a mile wide and an inch deep.
I don't think so. I mean, I think obviously we're looking at the partnership government and commitments that we've made with our independent colleagues. We're looking
keeping
at
everybody happy.
We're looking at commitments that were made with the Fianna Fáil party, but also we're implementing a huge amount of our own manifesto. And I think that often gets lost in it. A lot of what's been discussed already, a lot of what's been agreed has been in our own manifesto. So we are moving those forward. And I think as a government, we are working. And I think, again, to go back to the fact that this budget is the first budget in 10 years where our books are balanced. And I think that provides certainty for people, and people want certainty.
What about the pensions issue for women, which was raised during the week? It wasn't addressed in the budget. It looks like something that has raised the ire of a lot of people. Are you hearing anything that measures are going to be taken to address that?
It is, and I think it's something that needs to be addressed and something that needs to be looked at. Minister Donoghue and Minister Regina Doherty have both said this week that Minister Doherty and her officials are going to look at this issue. Specifically, what was raised during the week was around women and the fact that women had to give up work when they got married, that they maybe when they were having children, and all of this impacted on the contributory pension. But this is much wider than that, and it's a much more complex issue than that. Minister Donoghue very rightly said that to do it in one budget, it was going to cost a huge amount of money. If we look at the overall package of the new social welfare funding, you know, it's probably the same amount. So you have to look at how we can do it maybe over a period of time moving forward. So I know that Minister Doherty is going to engage with her officials. They're going to bring forward proposals. Those proposals will be put to a public consultation, and then decisions will be taken after that. So we have said that we will try and address this moving forward.
Well, the law
says that people who took time out of work and who went home and raised their kids are valued less by the pension system, and they actually physically get less money in their pockets as a result. And, you know, last December, Sinn Féin raised a PMB where we stated that there should be equalisation, that the 25% of...
private members' bill, just for people...
Private members' bill in the Dáil. And both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael voted against that private members' bill, which would have equalised those pensions.
That makes it hard, Niall, for you to speak out against this.
This is the dishonest... misrepresentation out of Patter and his party. They put down a motion for debate which had a number, pensions issue was bundled in with a number of other pension related matters, one of them which was having the number of credits one would require to qualify for a state pension, which would have a huge charge on the state. So we put down our own amendment, as all political parties do to motions that other people place. We put down our own amendment to that. We recognise the whole pension equality issue which is out there. I led for my party on Thursday morning.
So were you prepared to back that element of the bill?
Absolutely. And we have our own, of the motion. We have our own motion coming up this week in Dáil Éireann addressing that. I raised it
on leaders' questions. Will you back Niall's motion?
If you look at, we have backed many Fianna Fáil motions.
Will you back that one?
If it addresses this issue, absolutely. But
don't be trying to confuse people here with procedure.
Where was this issue in your negotiations with regards to Fine Gael in this particular budget?
It was in our general election manifesto.
No, but
you have influence over this particular budget. Allow me to finish. We have a motion this week singularly directed at this issue, and we will be sitting down with the government and we will be asking it to be dealt with incrementally over the next number of years, which is your approach to it also, Patter. I hope you will support us on Thursday, and it's an issue that there shouldn't be silly buggers being played with like what you're trying to do here today and confuse the listeners with Dáil technical procedure.
You mentioned the budget and that you said it was spread too wide, etc., and that maybe it wasn't Fine Gael ideologically. I would disagree. I think actually this was targeted at Fine Gael Street to a certain extent, because there's about a million people who are on health waiting lists and housing waiting lists who are practically ignored in this budget. These people are caught in a massive storm that's affecting their lives, and yet we're looking at things like sunbeds. Not that's not an important issue, but the two major crises of health and
investment
housing.
In the National Treatment Purchase Fund.
Yeah. There are
690,000
people on the waiting list for health at the moment. That's the equivalent of 10 counties population-wise. The National Treatment Purchase Fund won't go anywhere near that. Right now, there's 371
but
kids.
But I suppose, just to be fair, you can't say it was ignored either.
No, but it was ignored with regards to the value that it needed to achieve. The budget the new budget that went into health stood still. When you take into population differences, when you take into pay responsibilities, when you take in all of that, there was actually no new money to provide a sea change in the health services necessary.
Actually, I was just going to go back to the gender issue in relation to the pensions very specifically, because that's been on the agenda now on and off for about 10 years. I mean, Mary Coughlan was dealing with it when she was in government. Joan Burton made the situation a good deal worse by actually changing the rules, and now it's back on the agenda again. We have a huge issue with pensioner poverty, and a most particularly acute issue with women who experience significant contractions in their income when they reach the old age. And it strikes me that this is a particular issue that affects women who get up early in the morning and who went to work actually. Mm-hmm. And the cases we heard during the week were of people who actually had summer jobs when they were in their teens, mm-hmm. and who are now being persecuted for the fact that they actually put up stamps.
Do you accept that we can't afford to fix it?
I accept we can't afford to fix it all in the one go, but I don't think that we can allow this issue drift. It's been going on for 10 or 15 years, and it's time the country stood up to the extraordinary discriminatory practices it had against women who wanted to work but were put out of the workforce because of rules and laws that we had in the state.
No, and I don't think anybody's saying that we agree with some of those. And, you know, the fact that you had to give up your job when you got married, you know, all of these things.
Yeah, but there's a lot of hanging around with Macron, and this is my new feminist friend from Canada, Mr. Trudeau, and I'm with the feminists. But it's time for actual, concrete actions to ameliorate these situations. And we're not really seeing anything significant going in that direction.
But it would be absurd to suggest that we can solve several generations of discrimination of women in the workplace and our recognition of their contribution when they weren't in the workplace across one or two budgets. In fact, I think it can all be solved in a much broader debate about basic income. If we get to a situation where we pay everybody for their contribution to family, to home, to care, to society, before they step into the workplace, then I think that's ultimately where all the solutions are. This will be solved over three or four budgets to come. The financial resolution next week has absolutely no political... It has political impact in terms of attention, but it has no fiscal impact in that the government can ignore the motion. Mm. It's in the formation of the budgets. Either beginning with some details in the finance bill and spending and finding some money to address some... to begin to address in the finance bill.
That's happening
or a next
Thursday,
year budget,
isn't it?
That would happen.
Do you expect something to happen next Thursday?
Well, always the finance bill becomes the place where the government tidies up a couple of things or begins to tidy up a couple of things it missed or messed up in the budget.
Okay, and Micheál Martin said last night that the first thing he would do if Fianna Fáil is in government next time out would be to dismantle the new Strategic Communications Unit, which was set up to simplify government communications. And that unit, as we know, has a budget of €5 million. Labour leader Brendan Howlan is on the line. Brendan, thank you for joining us. I know you've stepped out of something to be with us, but you've complained to the Standards in Public Office Commission over this. Why?
Well, I don't think complaint is the right word, but I've asked for their advices on it. A few weeks ago, the Taoiseach told the Dáil, told me directly, that this new Strategic Communications Unit, which is to be created on top of all the existing comms units in government, would be cost neutral. So I don't think I was the only one to be really taken aback when I saw an allocation of €5 million in the budget last week for this unit. And all week we've seen the government has been running ads on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, basically ads that spin a positive version of the budget and that only feature either the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar or Pascal Donoghue. Now, I think Fine Gael should be paying for such ads, not the taxpayer. And certainly,
so that's the distinction for you. This is not promoting government, you say, it's promoting Fine Gael.
Well, we're not allowed to use public funds. You know, any party in the Dáil who gets public funds, we're not allowed to use them for political advocacy. That's just not allowed under the law. And when I raised this with the Taoiseach originally, you know, what about this Strategic Communications Unit, all he did was to recite a list of the achievements of the government. And that's why I felt, you know, if he's not going to answer questions up front and directly in the Dáil, then I'll ask the organisation we've set up, SIPO, the Standards in Public Offices Commission, to simply answer two questions. One, is it right and proper that a significant quantity of public money should be deployed in this way? And the second question I've asked them is in relation to the recruitment for the personnel of this unit, whether simply handpicking individuals complies with the Public Service Management Act.
If that's what happened.
If that's what happened, yeah.
Mandy Johnson, Helen McEntee, to come to you, writing in The Independent today, delivers, I think, a killer line on this. When a public relations department needs a public relations department, it's not working.
Well, I mean, I think we've always had a budget for communications. It's in this time, in Brendan Howland's time, and even the Merrion Street website was set up by Fianna Fáil. What we need to do is make sure that it actually works. We look at last Tuesday and the fact that we are announcing spending, current spending, of €60 million worth of people's money. We need to make sure that people understand, they know how that money has been spent, where it's going, how they can avail of certain things. And what we're doing and what we've done is we've looked at different models in different countries, the Dutch model, I think the Estonian model, where they're actually consolidating a lot of the communications that they have. I mean, we have different ministers,
people,
we have different websites.
Okay, I think
we
people might see merit in that. It's the 5 million that's getting people's backs up.
Well, we've been very open and honest, and we've actually said this is going to cost 5 million.
Well, you haven't,
it's coming.
You see, that's the problem.
It's coming from within the Taoiseach's budget, an actual department, the only department where we're seeing a 2% decrease overall. And I think if people are complaining that we want to be able to communicate what we're doing, how we're spending people's money, and actually overall this is going to be cost neutral once you bring and consolidate things together.
Okay.
And I think
that's what we're trying to do.
The Strategic Communications Unit is a very good idea. The government spends hundreds and hundreds of thousands every year. Everything from the taxman reminding us that we must put in our self-replied returns to drawing attention to various welfare schemes or reliefs that are available. So a Strategic Communications Unit that would look overall at how this government spends hundreds and hundreds of millions every year, if that costs 5 million, that of itself is not a bad idea. The mistakes here are in and around political communications. The government should never have suggested it wasn't going to cost anything. They should have admitted they went and headhunted one of the best people to come and do it. They should have just set it up and been upfront of that. The political communications around the handling of the communications unit has been a disaster.
Okay, well, Brendan, what do you say to that? That the idea itself is not a bad one. I mean, I would imagine that when you were in government, you would have liked to have seen better communication with people, particularly given the measures that you were taking at the time.
Well, the two completely distinct issues. One is the communications of the issues of government, what we're spending money on, how a scheme works, inviting people, for example, to apply for pensions, or how you apply for a passport. That's normal communications. political messaging is something quite different. And we're not allowed to spend public money by law on political messaging. And I am highly suspicious that that's exactly what this unit
is. OK, so when we saw those video clips of Pascal Donoghue walking into the RTÉ Radio Centre, were they part of political?
Brendan has been disingenuous here and he knows it. He's the one who's confusing it. Those clips and video clips were not put up by the Strategic Communications Unit. They were put up by MarionStreet.ie, which has existed for many years. But there's another point in your SIPO letter, Brendan, that makes no sense.
Well, I brought that up in fairness to Brendan.
I'm talking about bought ads.
OK.
Not video clips.
No, but you asked SIPO. You asked SIPO to give you advice on whether it's appropriate for department video clips to include a picture of the minister.
I did not.
Of course
any
it is.
Such thing.
You did.
I asked no such thing.
You did. You
I
said,
have the letter in front of me.
And I read it, and you said... you're asking SIPO... Firstly, you've written to the Secretary-General Department Teacher looking for clarification. Instead of waiting for that clarification, you've copied that letter to SIPO and said, pending the clarification, can you help me politically here by agreeing with
my... He's not entitled to do that, then. He's not entitled to write whoever he wants to.
He can write whoever he wants to, but let's not be clear, he's not making any legal...
But accountability... I know is inconvenient.
He's making a good political argument, but that's what it is. It's a political argument.
Is not an inconvenience.
It's a political argument.
Can I just say on that? I mean, there have been, as far as I'm aware, three main campaigns on this. The first has been a back to school campaign. The video, I think, has received over almost 250,000 hits on it. It is an information campaign to let people know what they're entitled to, what is happening, where their money is going. The second one has been around Ireland's Rugby World Cup bid. This is not Fine Gael Rugby World Cup bid. This is Ireland Inc. This is something that is going to be hugely beneficial to our country. And the third one is around our budget. Now, if people are saying that the Taoiseach of this country, that our Minister for Finance should not go before the citizens and tell them where this money is being spent.
Helen, they already have a budget to do that. Every single department, every single state agency.
But this is consolidating that.
Yeah, but I think we'd have to say, though, that 20 different money doesn't work.
All right, hang on. Niall Collins been waiting to come in on this. Go ahead.
Look, I mean, the net point is this. It is a blurring of the lines between party politics and government. There is no doubt about it. And when Leo Varadkar was challenged on it, one example was he cited there'll be an information campaign around FIS. That's the job of the Minister for Social Protection and the Department for Social Protection to make people aware of their entitlement to FIS and any changes in relation to that. I'll give you another example. I saw on Twitter Leo Varadkar standing in his own constituency at a jobs announcement, and he pulled in a senior executive from the IDA to partake in the video broadcast with him. Now, she looked actually, in my opinion, it's only my personal opinion, she looked decidedly uncomfortable doing that, but she stood there beside the Taoiseach of the country and did it. And I think that is wrong, bringing in public servants and civil servants who are supposed to be apolitical to partake in party political broadcasts, which are for the benefit of the Fine Gael individual politician.
But would Fianna Fáil have not known about that budget line of 5 million
and
before
the Fine Gael brand?
Would you not have been asked to sign off
on
that?
No, we didn't. Because
so it's only things that were in confidence and supply.
Is the confidence and supply. Okay. And the issue that I have is there's a budget of 5 million euros there. If you take out the salaries of it, there's about 4.5 million euros to run campaigns which will benefit Fine Gael and the Fine Gael ministers and their brand.
There are tens of millions of euros already spent by the government in each of the departments and each of the state agencies with regards marketing and educating people of what's available. There is an opportunity cost to this money, and some people might feel it's small beer, but it's not small beer. Right across the western seaboard of this country, we've lost significant population over the last number of years. The whole of the Irish language in this budget received a 2.5 million euro increase, and that includes Uadhrosna Gaeltachta, which is the jobs development organisation for the Gaeltacht areas. So what the government has done is, and this debate actually came up internally in Fine Gael, it's style over substance, it's message over actual change for real people on the ground. And there's dozens of different budgetary expenditures that fall less than that 5 million euros.
I'm just interested to know how you know what's going on internally in Fine Gael.
Well, during the debate, Fine Gael are very happy to tell stories about what's happening in Fine Gael, thankfully. But during the Fine Gael leadership battle, that was one of the big issues, whether Simon had the substance and...
Quick word from Teresa, and then we're going to move on.
I just want to make a much bigger point about what citizens actually know about politics. There was a poll in the Irish Times about 2 or 3 years ago, and people were asked, what's the single biggest area of expenditure in any given year? And actually, a majority of people thought it was the political system, which costs about 100 million. So if we got rid of everybody around the table, we'd save 100 million. Actually, the single biggest area of expenditure is pensions and social welfare payments, which is over 10 billion euros. So do we need something like this? Absolutely. I mean, should it be focused on the government's personnel individually? No, I don't think you can make a case for that. But there is an absolute critical need to communicate more effectively with voters.
How do you do it though if you don't focus on those?
Well, actually, this particular debate in and of itself is actually reinforcing the pre-existing dynamic and view that voters have, that actually the political system is all about getting things for themselves and spending and wasting money in not coherent ways. So this is not how you do it. But there absolutely is a need to communicate more effectively. And I think it needs to be done in broad brush strokes in terms of the overall picture of where the budget is, as well as the kind of discrete policy areas that were just kind of outlined about back to school.
So is the unit in itself a known goal, do you think?
In a way, it actually has reinforced the pre-existing dynamic, which is not very helpful for voters, because they really don't know where money is spent. And even the way the budget discussions took place, we spent our entire time talking about €1 billion, how that €1 billion was sliced up. But the other €59 billion was just there, and nobody really talked about what was delivered substantially within that. Even within the capital programme, which is due to grow to about €8 million by 2021, okay, we've not really gone into the detail of that. And I think that's why voters are very confused about where the money goes and what kind of value they get for their money.
Okay, Brendan Howland, we'll let you go now momentarily, but you're still not convinced, I'd imagine.
I mean, I've worked in three government departments. Each has its own PR section, staffed by civil servants who are not allowed to politicise the message. This is a unit to make a different emphasis to politicise a message, in my judgment. Now, if that's not the case, let us be clear, the research that they're going to do should be shared by everybody online. We should know exactly what the €5 million has been spent on. It's a simple matter of transparency. If it isn't falling into the trap that I suggest it is, of simply being a propaganda unit for Leo.
Okay. Brendan Howland, thank you for joining us. Plenty more to come after this quick break. On our panel today, we have Minister for European Affairs Helen McEntee, Niall Collins from Fianna Fáil, Pádraig Tobin from Sinn Féin, Dr. Teresa Reedy from UCC, political scientist there, and Noel Whelan, who's barrister and political commentator. Now, Helen, from what we see today in the papers, the government is not preparing for a hard Brexit and a hard border. And Stephen Donnelly from Fianna Fáil says this is reckless and it puts Irish jobs at risk.
I don't think so. I mean, I think we've been very clear in our position on this and our four priorities. We have maintained and upheld our position on them. The first is minimising the impact on our economy and our trade. Second, protecting the Good Friday Agreement in all of its facets. And that includes no return to a hard physical border. We have obviously the common travel area and then our place within Europe and moving forward. We have been very clear in that there cannot be a return to a hard border on the island of Ireland. In Theresa May's speech only a few weeks ago, she was very clear, and she represents the UK and her government, that there cannot be a return to a hard border.
That might be the desire, but everything that has not happened so far seems to point to a crashing out and a disorderly exit. So why aren't we planning for that?
Well, again, to finish my point, Michel Barnier and the task force team have very clearly said that they do not want to return to a hard border. So we have the three main, I suppose, bodies involved here, and Ireland obviously working with the EU27, saying we do not want to return to a hard border. Obviously, for us, the way for that to happen is by the UK remaining within a customs union or a single market. If that does not happen...
But then you have the revenue report saying that won't be possible.
Well, I mean, that was a revenue desktop study that was done following the result of the referendum last year. I don't think it says anything new. It's not anything surprising. If we are to have, a completely disorderly Brexit, it will have significant consequences for us, for the UK and for the rest of Europe. However, when it comes to this specific issue around the border and the impact on the Good Friday Agreement, on the peace process, every single person involved, any European member that I have met, have been very clear that there cannot be a return to a border. So whether that means something specific for the island of Ireland and the north of Ireland, you know, that's obviously not what we are proposing. That's
so
not
it
what
can't
we want
happen.
To see.
It's not going to happen. Let's not plan for it.
The language is divergent from the reality, and that's the truth of it. Because in the end of the day, if the British leave the customs union, the north, and the north leaves the customs union, well, then there's going to be regulatory divergence. So that means that products won't be able to cross the border as easily as they did. So everything from milk to beef, etc., will have to be checked for different reasons along the border. And so there's just no getting away from that particular fact. And right now, from the crisis that's developing within the British Tory party, it actually looks like we're going to even have a more chaotic exit of the British currently. So it is a responsibility for the government to carry out contingency plans for all potential situations that could arise. And I understand that they haven't done that as of yet. They need to be able to identify exactly what will be put into places if A, B and C happens.
Yeah,
Niall Collins, Leo Varadkar asked during the week whether Fianna Fáil wanted to start him to start training border dogs and finding sites for checkpoints. Is that what you want him to start doing?
No, and I think that was a very unhelpful comment, because Micheál Martin had rightly raised the issue of the leaking of the revenue report and what was in it, and the fact that the Taoiseach had previously denied any existence of such work being undertaken by government or agencies. But what I've been, and Fianna Fáil have been, concerning ourselves about are the fears and the worries that business people have. And we've been articulating, particularly for supports for our exporting Indigenous businesses and enterprises, particularly in the food and the agri-food area. And the Brexit response from the Minister, Francis Fitzgerald, whom I shadow in the Department of Business and Enterprise, has been very, very poor. Like, when you see an additional budget being given to the state agencies under the aegis of that department in the order of €3.5 million, yet this the strategic communications unit that we've just discussed has a budget of €5 million. It shows really where the government priority is in terms of dealing with the issues of Brexit and preparing our state agencies adequately and resourcing our SMEs in our Indigenous sector. Now, a loan scheme has been devised and was announced as part of the budget, dressed up as a €300 million loan scheme.
What do you mean dressed up?
Well, in fact, the Exchequer is only kicking in €24 million, and you know the fund will then go and try and leverage the rest of the money from the banks. So, you know, you're going to tie up the SMEs with a whole lot of red tape, and we haven't seen any detail around that. Similarly, we'd like to see a scheme which will help stabilise jobs in these vulnerable sectors, because we've seen the unfavourable currency exchange rate movements, particularly between euro and sterling, and how that has impacted on many of the food producing businesses around the country. So that's what the government needs to be focusing on also.
So the government's not doing enough, is
not
it?
Enough,
well, I mean,
no.
we've been very clear in our four priorities, and one of those is minimising the impact on trade and the economy. Where we are, though, in our phase of negotiations is on citizens' rights, is on the financial settlement, and obviously the Good Friday Agreement and the border issue. We have been very clear, and what I find quite worrying, and perhaps I read an article wrong this morning, but coming out of the Fianna Fáil Ardesh is the Fianna Fáil members saying what kind of border they want, whether a technology border. I mean, we are not talking about this because we are very clear that any kind of a return to a hard border would be absolutely detrimental to the North-South trade, to the Good Friday Agreement, and to the people on the island of Ireland. No, and for even Pather Tobin to be suggesting that we need to be preparing for that, you know, I find that shocking in the situation.
I'm sure the government in London, the officials in Brussels and the government in Dublin all want good and positive and sunny weather. That won't stop a hurricane from hitting landfall next week. It's almost like it's become a chant. There will be no return to the borders of the past. It will be a frictionless border. There can't be a hard border. That doesn't mean it isn't happening. There has been no substantial, significant advance in the negotiations about the border with Northern Ireland in customs terms during the course of these negotiations. We are still talking in the same language, ridiculous language we were talking last February when Theresa May is here, about how there'll be no frictionless border. The government has two choices. It either engages and insists on engaging directly and trying to resolve that aspect of the issue with Britain, or it begins to prepare for some element of a border.
Do you not think the preparations might be happening and we're just not being told about it?
Well, what we're specifically being told is that the departments were told to stop making the preparation because that was only pandering to a British presumption that that this type of Brexit was going to happen. Tony Connolly's leak during the week, the report from the revenue pulls the rug from entirely under that. There aren't, and this was said at the Westminster Northern Ireland Committee nearly a year ago, does not exist the technological wherewithal to solve this problem.
Okay.
This is a political problem.
That is actually effectively what was admitted this week by Michel Barnier when he came out and said that no progress really substantially had been made. So, I mean, the one thing that we do have is that the government has been successful in maintaining Northern Ireland as a really key priority in terms of the negotiations. But it's just not gone anywhere. So it's now actually emerging as a significant blockage to progressing the talks. And that's happening at the same time as levels of kind of hysteria within the Tory party and within kind of that microcosm of politics in southern England have really starting to ratchet up. They're now accusing each other of being traitors and saboteurs, and the internal dynamics are such that we don't even know what their position is anymore or what it's likely to be because we don't know where the Tory party is going to be in 6 months, not to mind in 2 years.
Just a few seconds from Padraig.
From some of the documents coming out of the EU at the moment, it would seem that the EU themselves have said the North, you know, there is an option, and that option is that North stay within the customs union. And it seems to me that they're more ambitious even than the Irish government. The Irish government are not taking it to London with regards to the North staying within the customs union.
So this is not a matter of the Irish government negotiating with the UK. We are one of 27 and we will remain part of one of 27.
And that's the problem.
Well, I don't think it's a problem because I think the fact that the Irish issues have been have remained in one of the top three priorities in the first phase of
negotiations
clearly shows that we have put our point across and that will remain.
This is a topic we're probably going to talk about every week, so I'm going to leave that one there. We're going to take a quick break, but coming up, stamp duty on farms and Michael Fitzmaurice. Now, farmers' groups are up in arms about the measure to increase stamp duty on land transactions in the budget. Michael Fitzmaurice, independent TD for Roscommon South Leitrim, is on the line. Michael, you told us that people have been on to you about this and they're worried.
Yeah, they're very worried. On the night in question, when the budget was announced that evening, I had farmers, I had auctioneers, and actually solicitors on to me what this would mean. It would mean between 12 and 15 million being forked out in the agricultural sector. I believe that it can be resolved in fairness to the minister. And this isn't dispatch of the minister. This is, I believe, the spirit of what he was doing was correct, because we are trying to make sure that big people hoarding large land banks are that they paid their fair share, and also the likes of the vulture funds. But what got caught in the crossfire was, say, a farmer that would be 68, 69 years of age and the son or daughter 37, 38, they would be caught in the crossfire and even transferred in the land. This isn't just about sales of land.
But there's no crossfire here, Michael, because it's not an unintended consequence. Pascal Donoghue said during the week that he's well aware of the implications for farmers, and that's why he put the exemptions in for young farmers and interfamily transactions.
First of all, Claire, it's regrettable at a time that we have 60% of farmers over the age of 65. We are trying to encourage young people into it. It is actually one in eight people, or one in seven people in right around Ireland is either working one way or indirectly or directly in agriculture. It is worth 10 to 12 billion to our economy, and we cannot send out a signal. And the other part about it is, Claire, we need to make sure we protect the family farm. There are ways of resolving this that will make sure that we can protect the family farms, and still, in the interest of the whole ethos of what the bill was about, still make sure that we catch those at the top end of it.
Take us through that solution quickly, if you can, Michael.
Well, first of all, I believe that there's a thing called congratuity. That's where the farmer, he has to be under 67. I think if that was abolished and let it up to a higher, basically not put an age limit on it, that will help the situation. But I also believe, and Claire, we need to just not alone just focus on farmers. With all the politicians you have there, in fairness to every politician out in rural areas, we are trying to encourage somebody to maybe buy the local shop and set it up, or something in the local hardware, to make sure that we revive small towns. And they're getting caught in the crossfire as well. So what I'm actually sending it into the Department of Finance. I believe that we should hold the 2% threshold up to the likes of 300 grand. From there, we should have a 4% from 300 to 500, and over that, pay the 6%. And it makes sure that Ireland was always about protecting the family farm and making sure that small SMEs are protected. And we can put clauses in there to make sure that that's the way it works out. But, but what we have done at the moment is that it is hard enough, Claire, to get youngsters to stay on the land at the moment, and now we are giving them a kick in the teeth that they have to pay more money.
Okay, Noel Whelan, you wrote that this issue is going to fizzle out.
It is going to fizzle out. I genuinely don't understand this controversy. £4,000 is what anybody who's about to inherit £100,000 worth of a farm is going to have to pay under this provision. Those of us who don't have inheritance of that order are looking at this and say, that's a very fair and reasonable additional amount to be paid in terms of stamp duty. What Mike Fitzmaurice is talking about there is farmers who are gifting to their sons and daughters quarter of a million or 300,000 or 400 quid's worth of farm, and they're being asked to pay 10 or 12,000 tax on that.
And you think that's a reasonable request?
Can I come back in there for one second?
That is entirely a reasonable request for those of us who don't have anything to inherit.
Well, Michael, first of all, Noel, in fairness to the Minister in the budget, for people in residential areas, he has made sure that for somebody that buys land where it's residential, that they can reclaim the 4%, which is right, to make sure that housing for people is made no dearer. So we have to make sure that we cover those people. Second of all, a farm is like a baton that you hand on. You might have the use of it for your life, but you hand it on to the next generation.
Or you can sell it for commercial property.
Hold on one second.
Very valuable.
It's a valuable asset, but it's no more than if you have a shop. You have the shop, and it's the things that's within it that makes the money for you. It's not the actual building. And what I am saying is, in the average farm down the country, it might be worth 300,000 or 400,000. Do you tell your son or daughter that they now have to pay 12,000, 15,000 more, when it's at a time, Noel, that we need security of food, at a time that we need to hand on the back, at a time that we need to make sure that we get younger people involved in it, and at a time that we make sure that we get schools in local areas and local shops.
Quick response, and then I want to hear from
everybody else's son and daughter is paying in excess of 46-50% real income tax on everything they get. They pay a third on every gift that they get. There is no reason why this massive inheritance, which the agricultural community benefits from, shouldn't be taxed at a very modest rate.
The point is here, to a certain extent, is the context of it, and the context is really important. 37% of all farmers in this state are considered to be independently economically sustainable. So that means a vast majority of farmers are not economically sustainable whatsoever. The average wage amongst farmers currently is about 15,000 euros a year, which is extremely low. So what we're talking about potentially is the whole annual income of a farm being paid as the stamp duty on an inheritance of a farm.
The party of the left is opposed to taxing assets.
Michael's proposal, is it something the government will listen to? Are you done on this issue?
No, I mean, there are a number of points on this issue. The changes that have been made are bringing us back to where we were before. In fact, they're probably coming in lower, I think it was, at 9%. But we know that if they remain at that low rate, it will never change. And there are obviously other areas that we want to change, and the taxation process that we have here in this country and other commitments that we've made. What we are saying, however, is that we do need to free up land. There is land that has been hoarded throughout the country. If people sell on this land for development within the 30 months, the government will rebate the 4%. Obviously, the issue of land that is agricultural, what's been lost, I think, in this whole process is that the 1% is still remaining for the young farmer incentive and also for the consanguinity. But we do understand that there is, you know, an issue with regards to the age and the 67
cut-off point. Seems to be, and it seems that the
point.
Minister for Agriculture, Michael Creed, didn't know about this because he was blindsided. He said initially that farmland would be exempt.
Well, what we do know is that Minister Michael Creed and Minister Pascal Donoghue, and I've spoken to both of them on this, are working on amendments to bring to the finance bill next week that will address the issue of the consanguinity and particularly address the transfers of land.
So this measure is going to be changed?
I know that they are looking at certain measures that will take into account the transfers of land between family members, but the remainder of it, or the land that is not agriculture, where it's not been transferred between family members, that will remain. And I think it's important.
That's a big change.
That those
That's
rates
a big
do
change.
Go up.
Michael, it looks like you've won this one.
No, I haven't won Anthony. What Helen is actually saying, and I've listened to her, what the definition of a young farmer is under 35. The reality of it is, and you know, this is, you come clear from a farming area in Leash, that farmers generally don't transfer land to 70, 75, 80. That's the general trend. It's not a win in the congratuity. That isn't the solvent of it. The other side of it is that we need to make sure, Claire, are we sending out a signal in rural Ireland that hasn't seen the benefit of, say, the progress or the boom that has happened in Dublin, the SMEs, are we giving them the kick in the teeth as well and telling people, don't start up in your small town? That's not signal.
Give me a quick word on this.
Just quickly, like, farming and comparing working farms up and down the country to some of the capital assets that get developed and sold quite quickly in our capital cities, your, you know, big buildings and properties. It's not really comparable. And the IFA and the ICMSA and all the farming organisations have been blindsided by this. Our party spokesperson, Charlie McConlogue, will be engaging with all the stakeholders to try and see how we can bring about some bit of recognition of that point.
Okay.
But the main point which was missed, and Michael McGrath made this in his budget contribution in responding to Pascal Donoghue, was the fact that the government has bet on capital transaction taxes to fund a vast majority of next year's budget,
which may not ever materialise, and that's a worry. An about turn here, because we've only a minute left, but Michael, are you still planning to run for president next year?
Well, sure, Claire, I said what I said, that that I expect more people to go into the race. Mike Fitzmaurice has said that I do believe there should be a contest, and we'll see when it's happening.
OK, so Fianna Fáil voted last night, didn't they, Niall, that they would put somebody forward?
Well, we haven't discussed it within our own parliamentary party. There was a motion passed at our Ardesh that the party should have a candidate. But look, I mean, the position of the party is that we won't make any announcement or decision on it until Michael D. Higgins makes his own situation known.
Didn't he last night that he would look at it in the new year?
Yeah, well, obviously we will have a conversation.
Michael D. Higgins is not going to say
We will have a conversation. And I suppose it is against the backdrop of Michael D. Higgins giving a commitment in the last presidential election that he would only serve one term. So that's really what's at the root of all of this, why Michael Fitzmaurice and I think Senator Gerard Crockwell has come forward, and I'm sure others will.
Okay, Paddy, you're shaking your head there. Why?
Well, it was funny because he said a motion was passed at Fianna Fáil Ardesh last night on it, and already it's been devalued into the party, parliamentary party will make a decision.
It's a non-binding Ardesh. Well, you didn't join us, so you know you want to have a say about what happened in our Ardesh.
Back to where we started at 1 o'clock.
You're having your cake and eating mine at the same time.
All right, Michael.
Can I come in on something there? At least it's positive that they are thinking about putting up someone. I do believe there needs to be a contest. Okay. I said that from day one, to keep the presidency held in the respect that it should be.
Okay, Michael, thanks for joining us on the phone. Thanks to all our panellists today. We're back here next Saturday at 1 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of the weekend and thank you for listening.
Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Anne Farrell. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Research was by Leslie Anderson, and Sheila Neveal was on sound.